The podcast you're about to hear is a comedy show intended for an adult audience, and it contains explicit language. All opinions are our own, and we may sometimes go on tangents that are not at all about figure skating. Strap in, enjoy, and remember, our safe word is quad sal. Let's go. Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Neda. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's the week of Halloween as we're recording this. It's Halloween, and I find myself super excited about it. So I'm kind of just like in a generally festive mood, which I guess is so stereotypical of me as like a millennial elder emo, like gothy whatever person in general. It's like so like hecking pupper of me to be so excited about Halloween, but I am, so that's, I'm living my truth. That's where you find me.
I mean, yeah, like I've never not been super super excited about Halloween, so and part of that has been like the Grand Prix when it coincides with, yeah, Halloween is always really fun.
It's always like the like fall festive season, fall into winter is like, mm-hmm, it's the Grand Prix series into like Japanese nationals takes me from like my birthday, which is in September, all the way to Christmas.
100%.
And it's just such a delightful series of events, which I'm always excited. I always find myself like, I think part of the buildup of the like grander fall winter holiday season for me is also because skating starts happening and the big outdoor ice rink in the center of my city, they've like started putting it up. It's obviously not out yet, but like I keep seeing the guys like walking around like arranging where the little huts with the mulled wine will be and like all of that. And it's starting to feel like there is good sides to the fact that it's cold and also dark at like 4 p.m., which does suck, but it's nice that there's, you know, some upsides.
Yeah, and I think that we maybe need to do a new segment called Mold Wine Watch, where every week you tell us how far they've set up the ring.
Well, so far they've put up, the huts themselves are up. The ticketing station is up, and they have put up the fencing around where the ice will go, but they haven't even put down like the basis for where ice eventually will be.
Okay, well, keep us posted.
I shall. In the meantime, do you want to talk about the Cup of China?
I do, yeah. Let's talk about it. We kind of talked about it yesterday on our stream, and thank you to everybody who was there. The VOD and the audio are up, and if you want to get access to that, you can on our Patreon, but you have to listen to the whole episode before we tell you where to go.
There is no other way to find out. And
it's true.
There is a teaser on our social media. You can see what we did for Halloween for the Patreon stream. There is a frankly unreasonable amount of interaction to our Halloween costumes. Someone did reply and say, this actually scared me. And I was like, happy Halloween, I guess. I'm sorry. Oh my
God. Yeah, we did a good job, I think. We pulled it off. So we had that out.
We had a fun time.
/IcedTeaPod.
So we're kind of doing things backwards because we've already talked about our honorable mentions from this event because that happened yesterday. And now we're just going to go through the podiums at the 2025 Cup of China. And we're going to start with men because we're leading with a spirit of positivity here. And we decided that we have more roasting to do with the men. So we're just going to start there and end upon a wholesome, pure, beautiful note that afterwards with the women's podium.
We're leading with positivity by leading with negativity, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's not negativity because in third place and with a true miracle of actually a miracle of men's figure skating happened overall in this event, where Menning did happen, there was a lot of movement around below third place. the first, second, and third skater remained first, second, and third in the short program and the free skates and overall, and all of the many happened below that, which I feel like is a weird precedent that we don't see as often. It's just like all around men chaos.
No, this was really like the men womened a little bit, and like, you know, this is the future.
Some of the men
want.
Womened. Some of the men womened, not
the
all
best
of
men
them.
Womened. Ain't that just
wow. Don't tell people who are afraid of trans people in sports or something. There is no trans people here to our knowledge. Oh yeah, decidedly woke and left-leaning figure skating is. Enough with the bits. Let's get so serious and talk about our bronze medalist here, Mikhail Shaidarov of Kazakhstan, who I love him so dearly. He's really, really risen to be one of my favorite men in the current field.
Absolutely. I am.
Imagine if I was just like one of my favorite men, period. Like in the world.
I mean, think how many are there? Ugh. And you don't even know most of them by name.
Yeah.
Probably is one of our favorite men.
He is. He's in the top 1%, I think, of men.
I would say like top 200 for sure, maybe top 100, because I don't know how many men I know personally. Probably like top 200.
For homework for next time, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make a list of every single man I've ever
name every name. Man.
Oh, you're a feminist? Name one man. Talk to me about Misha. Talk to me about the package he's bringing to the Olympic table this year.
I really like the short. It's another example. We talked about Tomoki kind of bringing sort of like a little bit corny, but like we buy into it, cool rock guy vibes. And
it's the other spirit Halloween costume that you can get for
it is
cool rocker dude.
Yeah,
royalty free rocker dude.
And the cover of In the Air Tonight is performed by a group called Sons of Legion. And that sounds like the thing that would be written on the plastic bag for the Sons of Anarchy costume that they couldn't get the rights to.
Oh my God, you're so right.
Like it's, Children of Chaos.
It is so that. It gender neutral siblings of discontent.
General disarray.
In the Air Tonight into going into a Kaleo is something, it's one of those things that I could never possibly think could happen until it's happening, you know?
Yeah, you never think it's going to happen to you.
Yeah, and then it is terrifying. It is possible. It has happened to Misha Shaidarov. He's so solid. He's so good. I really like the free skate. It is a fifth element free skate overall, but I do enjoy that the bits of the music that he skates to are called the Diva Dance.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the song.
The Diva is dancing.
I have so many thoughts about this.
Okay, please go ahead.
Okay, I don't know if any of them are interesting. I just have a lot of baggage around The Fifth Element because it's one of my favorite movies ever.
Okay.
And it has a lot of sentimental value to me because I used to watch it with my dad and it was like me and his like favorite movie. So I love the movie. Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge like Fifth Element. I mean, I've seen it a couple of times, but I'm not like a huge Fifth Element-er. So tell me how it feels for an element head, which is what the fandom is called officially.
Really?
No, I don't know. Oh. I don't know.
I don't know. You said it so convincingly.
Oh my God. I'm an actor.
I think that I have, like, if I had never seen one, I would be, like, so thrilled and over the moon. Mm-hmm. But I think that, honestly, like, Sasha Trusova just kind of wrecked all Fifth Element skating programs for me forever.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just for now, all I can think of is, like, the orange cone flap on the costume. And I just, it upsets me. It also upsets me because, as it's like this very specific thing where if you are an operatic soprano who likes sci-fi, there are dozens of us. No.
Your name is Megan Kelleher and you're talking to me right now.
There's actually a lot. And
no, I'm
this
sure.
The song, The Diva Dance, has become, it was at one point like a very like TikTok-y, like online kind of meme of like, everyone said they couldn't do it, but it's not possible for a human to sing it. But here's me singing it.
What?
And it was a lot of that. Yeah. And it's like,
why?
It's giving I don't know, it's giving like backflips were impossible until so-and-so did it. And the reasoning behind this is that before we had the song, this movie came out like before we had the internet and before everybody at home, including me, like I'm not shading this, but everybody at home could kind of be a music producer and kind of understood how this stuff works, right? So there's one specific, I mean, there's like the whole song is, I think, like in and out of like a person singing and then like a person's voice sampled singing things that a human voice could sing, but in this particular case, it is not technically a human voice singing those notes one after the other. It is a human voice sampled, and then those notes are put together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's this one part that I can't do right now because I haven't.
Because you are a human. Because you're a human woman.
It's hard. No, people can do it, and I think I maybe could if I practiced really, really hard, but it's like, you know, I can't really do it, but you know the part. And so. It's just really, really fast. And what pisses me off about it as a singer I've just seen like a million videos of people being like, well, everyone said you couldn't do it, but I'm amazing. And look at me, I'm doing it. Like, no one said you couldn't do that. No one ever said no one could do that.
Do you think Misha is bringing the same, energy to his skate by opening with a triple axel Euler quadruple sal?
You know what I will say? If that is the energy, I like it in this case.
Do you think it's dramaturgically accurate to his experience to be like, they said no one could possibly do this, but here I am doing this impossible element. Is this the fifth element? Is the fifth element triple axel Euler quads?
The fifth element is the quintaxel.
Oh God, I don't like where I've talked this into.
Yeah, no, you're kind of right, honestly, but I like it in this case because I don't know how to skate, and so I'm impressed by it. I only get mad when it's something I know how to do, and then I get, like, gatekeepy about it because I'm
My
annoying.
Very controversial take is that I find that jump combo so much more exciting and impressive than, like, the quad axel or the backflips or the rest of the things that the men have been working on, you know, accelerating the sport and bringing the sport forward with. Out of all of the, like, near impossible, they said we couldn't do it, but we did, elements that we've been seeing, for some reason, the sheer drive and insanity of the triple axel Euler quartel just tickles me. Also, its base value is, like, 18 point something, like 18.1 or 18.2, I'm not sure. I don't have it open in front of me right now, but that's bad shit to me, and I think it's ballsy, and I think it's also, I'm biased because I like Misha, so I'm like, yay, go son, you're doing the scary thing.
No, I like it. I think it's really dope to have a combination that you kind of came up with, and you're like, what now? You know, like, I'm also playing at this game. I like it too. I mean, as I have said, I'm not the greatest at telling on site whether something's a quad or a triple. And so the quad axle sometimes gets past my eyes without being like, oh, because sometimes even like a triple axel, I'm like, was that, I don't know. So the combos for me, like, those are really impressive. I know that a lot's happening because they take a long time and they give my brain a chance to catch up and be like, wow, yeah, still going great.
It's still happening.
I think, what do we think of his costume for the fifth element?
I don't know if I have any, like, big, strong feelings one way or the other about it.
It's been a long time since I saw the movie, but I'm trying to remember. I feel like it was inspired by the villain, but I could be totally wrong.
I'm pulling it up. I want to see it right now because I...
The Gary Oldman. Oh, Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg. I feel like it was a Zorg-inspired thing, kind of, because it has that, like, very, like... structured, like, sci-fi fashion thing to it, but I don't know. It was interesting. I can't remember that being a specific outfit from the movie, so I'm like not sure. Maybe, I mean, again, I just have to rewatch it. Maybe a couple things that I would have preferred to see. I would have preferred to see like a Ruby Rod costume. I think would be fun if you're going to be a man doing the fifth element. I don't know if Misha would. I don't know if I would want that for Misha. It doesn't seem on brand for him, but someone should. And if that's what he wants, he should. But also, I would have liked to see some blue in there. I feel like the diva Plava Laguna is the original blue for an amazing reason, you know? Like, She's blue.
And this, like, for someone like me who's, like, seen the movie but, like, doesn't really, like, super know it well and everything, this is just... It's just a men's costume. It's sparkly. It's black.
You know, I've seen, like, hundreds of times, and I don't remember this costume. Granted, I have no memory. I don't remember anything that's ever happened.
Yeah, but, like, this costume doesn't, like... Weird, like, it's maybe a silly parallel, but it's not like, you know, when everyone was doing Matrixes and it was like, oh, it's like black with some greens in it, and it evokes, like, immediately evokes a reference. Like, this is just a nice costume that I could see him wearing for any program.
Yeah, totally. And I think the, like, if I think of, like, what are the iconic outfits from this movie, I'm thinking, like, the Lilu one, which obviously, like, is a girl outfit, but, like, the white shirt with the orange suspenders. And then I feel like Bruce Willis's character also just kind of wears, like, a white t-shirt type thing. And then, like, Ruby Rod in the leopard bodysuit. And then I feel like Gary Oldman just wears, like, pinstripes. So I don't know. I'd have to look at it again and, like, watch the movie again. I don't know. It's just like a small thing. I was just trying to figure out. I didn't know if you could remember whose outfit it was because I just felt bad that I couldn't.
Mm-mm. No, I don't. I don't got it. But do you have any other strong thoughts about Misha at this point, or can I transition us in the most insane manner?
You can. Yeah. I think my only thought is that it felt a little rough around the edges, which is fine. Yeah. I think that's part of his charm, and I'm happy to see it get cleaned up a little as the season goes on, because I'm sure it will.
Agreed completely, but I do want to talk to you about movie-inspired free skates, and I do want to talk to you about recognizable costuming that's clearly connected to a movie. Welcome to the Blonde Pope. We are talking about Daniel Krassel, who, for better or worse, did end up in silver with some jumps that did happen and did not get cold as much as I would have liked them to get cold. I say for better or worse because if I were anywhere near this judging piano, well, first of all, we would have been in deep, deep trouble because I don't know how scoring works. But secondly, I would not have let any of this happen. But the good side, the good news here is that we get to talk about it on Maine. And
thank God.
I do have things to say, but let's start. Okay, Daniel Grasso, right? Blonde, tall, Italian, questionable. Let's start with the short program.
Yeah, for me, I don't have like a shitload of thoughts about this.
Exactly.
Me being
exactly.
Very... This is the most eloquent I've ever been. I don't have a shitload of thoughts about this. You can tell I moved back to Rhode Island, right? But but my main thought is that last year, he mm-hmm. was a little baby boy.
Yeah.
And we were like, that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
And then in the exhibition skate last year, he was like, I'm a sexy man. And it's like, well, yes, sure. But also it's weird that you're doing that like the day after you did I'm a little baby boy. Okay. So now his short program is very definitively, I'm a sexy man. And I'm like, good for him. I love this for him. It's so much more age appropriate. I think that this is like a cool step for him to take. I don't know yet if I totally buy that he's like feeling the fantasy yet, but I would like to see him do that. Like, I think it would be a fun new avenue for him to explore to be like, I'm a sexy man.
Yeah, as of right now, I don't think that's happening. I think the only thing that's happening is kind of like, I'm Italian and this is Italian and the Olympics is in Italy and Italianing this short program.
He needs to do the Yuri on Ice thing and like find his Eros or whatever bullshit that was. Not bullshit. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Urianis. You're a beautiful program. I shouldn't slander you that way.
I miss her.
I miss her, too. I was thinking about her the other day. But anyway, yeah, but that's what he needs in this program is, like, just a tiny bit more of that. Like, he needs to just, like, find his inner diva. But there were moments where I was like, I don't know. It reminded me of, like, when somebody, like, dresses up sexy for the first time to, like, go out in, like, their freshman year of college or something. And they're, like, kind of feeling it, but then they're kind of embarrassed, too. And they're like, ugh.
They're like, don't look at me. Don't look at me. I'm like, yeah, this is just some clothes that I put on. Like, it's whatever.
I know he's, like, fun on the inside. And he's got to let that out. But part of it, as well, is that he's got a really awkward movement style. And I think that... You know what's strange?
No.
I feel like...
Everything about it, but carry on.
What's strange to me about it, and this is like, I don't know if this is an overshare. I think that people in real life who are awkward and bizarre and are kind of like giving space alien are like really attractive, and or like I'm really attracted to people with that vibe. And so I don't understand why it doesn't work for me on ice. Like, it doesn't read as sexy for me on ice. I just don't get it. Like,
which
where that disconnect is
part?
For me. But
wait, go back. Talk me through like where. Yeah. Do we know where the disconnect happens? Is that too oversharing? Can we psychosexually psychoanalyze your?
I mean, why the fuck not? I think it comes back to confidence. I think that it's sexy to me to be visibly bizarre of a person and yet also be like, whatever, this is me. Like, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that it comes back to the confidence that I was talking about a second ago with Daniel, that whether or not he does mm-hmm. his like sexy little gay Italian boy pose, or whether he does his weird like this is my first day in a human body, I'm from Mars, whatever the vibe is at any given moment, I think I just need to see a lot more like
commitment.
Yeah, like I'm like, I'm here, this is me, and like I'm the shit. I think that we need to see a little more of that from him, because that's how he's being scored. And
yeah.
like I
and
don't
that's
wanna,
how he's being set up for going to the Olympics, which it's one of the many like subplots of this Olympic season. Is sometimes I think about Italian men and who's gonna get to go to their home Olympics, and it gives me hives. And he is being scored like it's gonna work out in his favor. And if that happens, I would like to see the conviction of someone who like fully thinks they've earned it, you know?
Yeah, and like, I'm not saying he needs to be cocky, but I think that there's a difference between being cocky about your skating and walking out like you own the rink and it's not like an act that you're putting on. And I think, you know, with that, I think you do have to fake it till you make it, whether it's on the ice or off. And so if it seems like he's faking it now, maybe that just means he's on the road to making it. But that's what I want to see for him.
Do we think he's method acting for Conclave, which, spoiler alert, is his free skate, which I have so many things to say about. Because the whole thing about being the Pope is you shouldn't be the Pope if you want to be the Pope.
The thing about being the Pope is if you look directly at the Pope, you can't see the Pope. It's like you can only see the Pope out of your peripheral vision.
Can we talk about the blonde Pope, which is what I started? I'm going to make the blonde Pope a thing. He is the blonde Pope to me.
I have a question. I would like to start with a question.
Yes, please go ahead.
Billy, what does it feel like when you're the Pope?
Oh, I was not expecting that to be the question. I was prepared for several questions and none of them were this.
I've been sitting on that since like July. I'm so proud of myself for not forgetting to do it.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Okay, for our first time talking about this, I'm going to try to not do Conclave spoilers. Yes, the movie is a year old as of yesterday or like as of...
Does that mean I have to not do Conclave spoilers because I really want to?
Okay, everyone, Conclave spoilers are going to happen. Conclave is an incredible film. If you somehow haven't seen it, but you want to, now would be the time to pause this episode, go watch Conclave, and then come back, because we're inevitably going to end up spoiling something.
It's also based on a book that's been out for like a million years. So.
Well, yes, and it's also based on being the Pope, which is a thing that people do in real life, allegedly.
One of the oldest jobs on Earth, actually.
Yeah, but... Okay, here's the thing. When it was announced that Daniel was going to be the blonde Pope, well, that he was going to do Conclave.
When they put the blonde smoke up.
I kind of did not expect him to take up the mantle of becoming Pope mid-program. The only thing I could not have predicted, I expected him to walk out in full red, which didn't happen, and I'm sad about that. But, like, I expected him... I would have accepted, like, gloves in the shape of a turtle. Like, I would have accepted so many things. Right? Like, little, like, tortoiseshell gloves.
People need to be giving him turtle plushies. Listen. This is important. Call to action. If you're at a competition where Daniel Grassel is, you have to throw him turtles after Conclave. You have to do it, please.
That would be so, like, actually thematically beautiful, and I would, like, really appreciate that. However, instead, we have, like a weirdly aggressive, almost sexual question mark, ripping of the buttons to reveal. And at first I was like, oh, he's just like white and sparkly. Like that's just figure skating outfit. But it's not. It's literally like Pope vestments that you wear when you get elected to be the Pope. Like if you Google just like official Pope clothes, you see the white and the gold and the everything. So I think the implication of this program is that that the smoke does go up halfway through, like just about around the time of the choreo step of the choreo sequence. And we have a new Pope, and he's not from Chicago. He is from wherever Daniel Grasso is from. Where was he born? I don't know. Italy somewhere.
I know, but Murano. I can't summon the
Murano.
Name.
Murano.
He's from Murano. And I keep wanting him to skate to the song Murano from Chess because somebody should, and it should be him. But
well, now that we have a Chess revival, maybe someone's going to go see Chess and then we can end up with a Chess program.
That's true. It's my time for all of my Chess references to finally be relevant after 10 years or however long I've stand that musical. Listen, I love Chess too. So listen, choreographically, at first I was like, that's so many crucified Jesus arm poses, like egregious, like so many. And then I realized, I think some of that is just him having stiff elbows. Some of it is just maybe him just holding his arms out and just having kind of a stiff elbow. Because when you put the idea of Jesus on the cross into someone's head before you watch a men's figure skating, it's like, yeah, there is a lot of overlap there with the arms out, you know? So maybe it was just, I question how much of that was intentional. I could have done with none of it, actually. I don't think there. I think personally, yes, okay, obvious Catholicism reference, whatever. But if you see the movie,
wait, in the Conclave program, no way.
Yeah, but that also felt like if you haven't seen Conclave, it'd be like, what's it about? I don't know. Jesus is probably part of it, right?
Yeah.
But if you have seen it, I actually don't think there's an awful lot of Jesus. No character in that is clearly symbolically a Christ figure, at least not like visually, as far as I remember.
We don't have like the Western idea of like a Christ-like figure with like the little beard and the long hair and the everything. You know?
Yeah, and nor is the spirit of self-sacrifice or like crucifixion or whatever, like giving yourself for other people, like nor is that even really a theme in the movie. So I was kind of confused by that, but whatever. Aside from the skating, like I need to talk about the costume reveal. I was not ready, and I have so many questions because, okay.
Yes.
First off, I screamed when it happened. I was not ready.
Oh my God,
ready.
Me too. I like screamed. Genuinely actually shrieked in real life.
Me too. I yelled, what?
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, to just take it back a second to something that's not the costume reveal. I'm so all over the place on this. I'm so in the weeds with David Pumpkins / the Daniel Pope. I need to talk about the program opening with the Pope is dead. Like,
did we need that?
No, we didn't. But counterpoint, if I may, because I'm a Libra and I like to consider both sides. And actually, no, I'm not. I'm a Pisces, but I'm a Libra moon.
Since when are you a Libra?
I'm a Libra moon. I forgot the word moon. I was too perplexed by this. I forgot the word moon. I'm a Libra moon. And so inside my head and my inner self, I need to consider both sides of all the arguments. And my other side of that argument is, Stanley Tucci should be part of more people's programs. I think that was Stanley Tucci speaking, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so he needs to be part of more people's programs in general. Put in a Stanley Tucci voiceover at the start of, like, every program, whether it's needed or not, because Lord knows it was not needed here. The Pope is dead. Okay, we know that. That's one of those things.
You want choreographers, figure skating choreographers, to be buying Stanley Tucci cameos to get him to summarize the plots of assorted things.
Yeah, like I want like those ghost programs, like that was fine that they had like the sirens and everything in them, but I want those ghost programs to start with Stanley Tucci going, these two are sexy and they're dating and then he died.
Every single program you get like, God, I don't even, like you get a Kill Bill, you get Hana Yoshida Kill Bill, and it starts with Stanley Tucci summarizing the plot of Kill Bill.
Yeah, she fucking hates this guy, Bill. Or like, what about Titanic? Stanley Tucci could just be like,
big ship. Get,
they're going to die. They're on a boat and they're going to die.
Big ship hits iceberg.
Yeah, like I think we need that. But anyway,
it's like he plays like that game where you have to like describe a movie as shittily as possible.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. So, okay, lot going on. I need to talk about the reveal because I think that the story of this reveal is that he was secretly the Pope the whole time. Okay, that's the story. I've been here the whole time. The Pope was you.
I've been Pope the whole time.
I've been Pope the whole time. Technically speaking, and this is where we might get into some vague spoilery territory. Uh-huh. Technically speaking, mm-hmm. that is true of the movie and the conclave, the concept of a conclave in general, right? Technically, the next Pope is in the room with us. Right? That's the
yeah.
whole point.
I mean,
We don't know who it is yet, but the next Pope yes. is here. The conceit that the one who is going to be the next Pope has the Pope clothes on underneath and is ready is, I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop thinking about the idea that the way we reveal the Pope is a fucking Chippendales tear away vestment.
Everyone in the room where the conclave happens, at some point, they do the whole thing where they walk up and it's like real tense and they vote and like it happens.
Four beautiful cardinals stand before me, but I only have one ballot in my hands.
And then it's like, okay, everyone, this time it worked. Like we've managed to vote. Everyone take your clothes off. And they take their clothes off and they don't know who it is, but they've magically put on the Pope vestment. Is that the implication here?
Yeah, and, like, you know, you look around and you're like, God, I really wonder who the Pope's going to be. And then there's, like, one guy in the corner is just profusely sweating. And you're like, I wonder what that's about.
It's like a Drag Race finale where there's obviously going to be a reveal. So everyone looks just kind of gigantic because they have, like, layers upon layers of reveal clothing.
Yeah, so I guess I don't know that the surprise I was the Pope the whole time is a maybe if you squint thematically, vaguely sort of true, but definitely not in a literal sense in any way that made.
Also,
and, you know, because it's if I had to guess the plot of Conclave based on this program and I hadn't seen it, I would guess that we go through the whole movie and we vote and we vote and we vote and we think we know what's going to happen. And then at the end of it, some guy off the street named Steve walks in and is like, surprise, I'm the Pope. And now, it's like, whoa!
Megan, I'm not Catholic, and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't that basically happen in the actual conclave that happened, like, this year?
I wasn't there. I'm like, I mean, I'm also not technically Catholic because I wasn't confirmed, but even if I had been, I wouldn't have been there, so I couldn't tell you, but I think maybe sort of. And maybe sort of thematically, this is also what happened in the movie. But again, I'm like, this is what I'm grappling with, is that, like, was it intended as a subtle, like, whoa, you didn't expect this, but the Pope is someone you didn't expect. Because that kind of is the movie.
That kind of is the movie, and kind of tangentially as well. Now, I'm going to save the other thing that I wanted to say for the next time we inevitably talk about him. Because I do want to give people time to, if you haven't seen Conclave, please, please watch Conclave.
It's just like a great, great, great movie.
It's such a good film. Do you want to talk about Good Skating?
Yes, I do.
Shun Sato was undeniable and won. And it was awesome.
You love to see him succeed.
I love to see him succeed. I cannot believe it's happening while he has a package of programs choreographed by Guillaume Cisseron, who I can't believe he has found several ways to weasel his way back into the zeitgeist. And again, thank fucking God we don't talk high dance on this podcast, but I can't believe that this is the choreo that we're working with. Even if he wasn't a questionable human being, I do think if you want to be a choreographer, regardless of your own personal accolades and shit, you should not be starting at, you know, bidding for the Olympics level senior program choreographing. And I think there's much to be desired in that department. But Shun has been making it work. And at this point, that's all I can ask for.
Yeah, I don't think that he is. I think that, okay, I love Shun skating and I think it's so gorgeous. I think in the field he's in, I don't know that it's incredibly distinctive. So I think that that's what he's suffering from is that it's not, he never has like the world's most exciting, like,
someone who's programs. Just trying their hand at choreographing, doing his programs, does not really bode well for, you know, let's explore what your unique movement style is and like, let's really hone in on that, because that's the kind of instinct that you develop when you've been choreographing longer.
Yeah, I think I've been hard in the past on programs that are like just pretty, that are like, especially like, you know, packages of a short and a free together that are both just really nice and pretty. Yeah. And maybe they're both classical or maybe they're both, you know, and they're just showcasing that the skater has a lot of beautiful lines and classical skating skills, which is what I want to see. But I think that in order to carry off that vibe, because I think it can be done. Mm-hmm. And I think it is being done. I think it's being done. I think Rino Matsuike is doing it. I think Jia Shin's doing it. I think that there are so many skaters who are doing it. I don't think that you can bring an energy to it that's like, holy shit, I really hope I like what land all the jumps. I got to lock in. I got to white knuckle it, you know, because there is always, it might just be his face, but there's a certain energy of, holy shit, I really fucking hope I make all these jumps. And that to me, like, if you have that going in, which is fine. If you're a man, you kind of have to, right?
Yeah.
But that kind of energy will spoil, like, a chill ladies in lavender vibe for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wonder if him, you know, entering his season with this win as well and kind of confirming his Cup of China reign and everything, I wonder if that will, like, kind of solidify his own skill set for himself so that he can maybe then not you know, have that expression of abject terror as the very chill, beautiful skating is happening. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's not even his own fault that he's bringing such a chill, poised, princely energy. I think there's a lot of chaotic, like, Kaomiura-type energy around him to, like, kind of make him seem that way. And not that I, like, no shade to Kao, I love Kao. But, you know, there's a lot of different personalities in Japanese men's figure skating now, which is really cool. You know, for a deep field, you want to be seeing a lot of variety. So I hope he can be consistent. And I know the Olympics means a lot to him because for those of you who are newer fans, he didn't make the Olympic team last time. And he actually, because he was dealing with an injury and he ended up actually having shoulder surgery the day of like the men, it was either the men's short or the men's free, but it's not that like
he was actively in hospital.
Yeah. But he was like, the injury prevented him from being selected in a way. And then he had to have surgery on the day that he could have maybe been there. And it was just really hard for him. And he was really sad about it. So that story always really stuck with me. And I don't know what the future brings for Olympic team selection, but he was in the Grand Prix final last year. And if he can do it again this year, which he very well could, I think that would be a really strong case to build for him for his spot on the Japanese men's team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the consistency that we saw here, again, the miracle of miracles of seeing a man just maintain his first place, like the way that he did. Very, very strong case. And I think that's very exciting.
I mean, a level of consistency that I actually can't think of another Japanese man who's brought that to us recently, like including Yuma.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right? I mean,
yeah, there is a lot going on there. At some point, we're probably going to have to like do a deep dive, maybe for Patreon or something, because again, it's one of those women too, subplots. It's one of those subplots where I start thinking about it and it gives me hives. So then I stop thinking.
Yeah, and I do want to say I really like his Firebird a lot. I think that I could.
Yeah. I love Firebird.
I want him to ratchet up the drama a little. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, in terms of, like, his face and his overall, like, embodiment of things, like, I want him to just portray something a little bit at any point. I don't get that right now. But I think the Firebird is, I think he's living up to it. I think it's a tough piece of music to live up to. Every time I hear the orchestra hit, I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
But I think he's doing it. I think that I saw somebody on Twitter point out that he had really like graceful arm movements. And I think that's true. I think he has a really specific graceful carriage to his arms that lends itself well to being like wings. So
I agree.
That's my two cents about that.
Hey, speaking of the Japanese Olympic team, do you want to transition into women?
I would love to transition into women.
You'll handshake me many, many beautiful women out there. Transitioning into there's a joke. I don't know what the joke is. I'm tired, yo. The women mend a little bit. First of all, the level of skating that we saw from the women's field overall in this event was absolutely beautiful. We did end up with 11 skaters as opposed to the usual 12.
It was Anxingyi, right? Who was ill. I felt so bad. I love seeing her skate. She's always got the best costumes, the best personality on ice. Like, absolutely adore her. I hope that she's well and we can see her again soon.
Agreed. But because of that, I don't think that we can do like full actual stats. But everyone in the short program was above 60, which, especially with like, you know, home picks and skaters who don't get to skate for an international audience as often and everything, it's really, really exciting and cool to be part of an event where the overall quality of the skating was so, so, so good across the board from the women.
Yeah, that's, you know what? You're so right that, not that, I like the fact that the home picks give a chance to skaters who might not have, like, gotten their way up there based on solely scores, but it is really cool that the home picks did so amazingly well, and that they were also like, damn, like, you are a high caliber skater, you belong here.
Yeah, in general, like, really, really good skating happened, but then we also had some, like, shifts around the placements, which is how we ended up with Renka Watanabe in the bronze position. She had been second after the short. And then it was one of those cases where the math worked out for her because she had a little bit of a rough time in the free. She ended up fifth in the free. And I'm, for one, very happy that math happened to work her to her advantage, because I adore her. And it's always great to see her. And I love seeing her succeed.
Yeah, I've always loved her. And she's one of those skaters who I fell for so deeply, like, the first couple of seasons. And then I had to really kind of, like, distance myself a tiny bit from being so invested in, because the consistency didn't end up being there. And I just couldn't handle. I can only have, like, one Wakaba Higuchi in my life who I'm just, like, convinced is the GOAT. But, like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, So seeing her succeed is everything to me. I will never shut up about how her mommy makes her costumes. It is unbelievably impressive to me. They are so beautiful and unique. Her edges are just so superb. I think that the main conversation point for me with the women is that we had a lot of repeat programs. We had out of the podium, I want to say, what, 5 out of 6 programs were repeats.
Yeah. And, well, some of it has been because of, like, different circumstances.
Yeah, like, let's talk about that. Like, Brinka had the Disney issue legally, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she had a short program to Moana, the second Moana movie. Moana the second. And then she ended up going back to her Tango de Roxanne. And, first of all, fuck the mouse forever for, like, we've never... If you can be on the side of history that's not Disney's side, you're probably on the right side of history, in my personal book. But I do think we won here because the mouse said no to skating. Because Moana 2 is not exactly the pinnacle of musical genius.
No,
and you
it's
can
not.
Simply never go wrong with a Tango de Roxanne.
Yeah, I had to watch Moana too because it was like really important to my niece that I did.
Well, yes.
And it was
because you have baby nieces and that's who it's meant for.
I mean, she's like 14, but
well, you have several nieces though.
Yes, I do. I do. No, it was important to her that we watch it together because we watched the first one together and she's very sentimental and I appreciate that about her. But I didn't think it was good. And I don't think that I think the song that was going to be skated to, which is like the villain song, I thought it was like fine. But I didn't think any of the songs were great. I don't think that Lin-Manuel did them, right? He did just the first movie.
No, that's the whole thing is they tried to capture the same kind of magic and it's I don't think you can do that.
I've also never really been that into
regardless
any Disney
of regardless
sequel.
Of how you
I don't think any Disney
yeah, well,
sequel
yeah,
necessarily needed to
no,
happen.
No,
but
no, in general they're usually a pretty buttoned up nice story that tends to conclude by the third act of the first film.
Well, in my day, it didn't used to be big budget, right? Like, when we were kids, it used to be, like, a whole different animation team, a whole different animation studio. It looked janky. It never had the budget. Straight to VHS, mama. Like, you know what I mean? Like, different voice actors who cost less. It was a whole... I mean, now they will do, like, a full big budget thing because the economy of Hollywood is bananas. But anyway, I think that I maybe am biased against sequels. But so I am happy she did Tango to Roxanne. I think she's got one of the best ones. Yeah. I really do, and I always have. So, I mean, yeah, thrilled to see that back. It's clearly working
and
for
her. And then I don't know about her choice to go back to Jin. Like, I don't know why. It's one of those programs that I don't personally, like, extremely super connect with, but she does embody it so intensely that I can't help but be, you know, awed by it. So I can't be mad, even though this time, again, it wasn't, you know, technically maybe her greatest showing. I guess because it's the Olympic season, many people are banking on something they connect with, something they can be secure in. I don't know. Many reasons.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that. Like, to be honest with you, I don't mean, like, I'm really reluctant to ever say, like, this is the most XYZ that has ever been, because I don't think that we can be unbiased about that. But I do feel like this is more skaters doing old programs than I have ever seen in a single season.
Yeah.
I think. But I'm curious about it. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm just curious about it. And I think you're right. Some of it is the Disney the rights thing. Some of it is the security thing. I think it's been a weird Olympic cycle because of, well, COVID was actually last Olympic cycle, right?
Yeah.
But still influenced things. I agree with you about Jin. I think that it's a beautiful program, but I don't know that it was iconic in the way that the Tango to Roxanne was, in a way that I wanted to see it again. However, it was, both of these were from her really, really incredible season. And so I'm like, if this is her bringing back that mojo, that really got, you know, that there's something to that. But I'm thrilled that she went out and was like, fuck it, triple axel, triple toe, I'm Rika Kira. Yeah.
Her tech is very impressive to me, and I respect that she was going for it. And how do I say this as someone who doesn't skate anywhere near this level? I wish that she will eventually find the balance between, like, throwing out the big, brave, ballsy tech and also harnessing the rest of the performance. Because in this case of this free skate, yes, we did see two triple axels, one of which was in combination, and then the rest of it just kind of, you know, got rattled around that. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I don't know if it's worth doing the, like, super big impressive thing, because, like, when you draw the line, does the math work out?
Right, exactly. And it's, if it was a move, to be perfectly honest and to be perfectly fair, if it was a move being thrown out by anyone who I liked less, I would be like, that's bullshit. That's not in the spirit of what we want to see. So, whatever, I mean, it's her, and I, like, want her to succeed. So I'm like, yeah, do a crazy, insane thing. It's tough, but I agree with you. I think that, and I think she can be such a phenomenal performer. Sometimes when we say, like, I wish they would balance the artistry with the jumps, it's a very nice way to say, like, go girl, give us nothing. But because we know she can give us so much of something, I agree. Yeah. I wonder if it's a comfort thing. She hasn't competed a triple axel in a while, as far as I can remember. And I think that it must be a confidence thing, right? Because I remember Amber, the first few seasons she was doing triple axels, it felt like that. And then now it's, like, just bread and butter for her, because she's just got that experience under her belt. It's like with anything else, right? Like,
oh, yeah, you got to build up the having done it a bunch.
Yeah, there's a certain level of, how do I say this? This is certainly true. I have to explain this a lot in music lessons, and I think it's true probably in sports because it's also something you're doing with your body. When you're not 1,000% sure that something's going to work, or you're not 1,000% sure how you're going to make it work, there is actually less of a chance that it's going to work, because the way that you manifest that unsure energy in your body physically affects the outcome. Like, in a very, like, in a technique sort of way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I think that there's a difference between that kind of energy going into a triple axel versus, like, Amber, who's like, this is my best jump. And, again, like, we'll talk about Amber in a second, but that didn't used to be the case for her. So, like,
yeah. Oh, it just takes absolutely. Time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to move us on and have us talk about Alyssa Liu, who ended up in the silver position after having been first in the short and then second in the free. And this is how the math shook out. She is one of those cases where we did see both of her programs from last year, but I'm not going to harp on that because she had a very serious reason for changing her short program, which frankly, we're not like the podcast qualified to talk about. And then her Lady Gaga, her new free skate, as far as I've heard and I think is being reworked and we're going to see it again. So I do think that this time we kind of saw like stand-ins just because it was time to go perform and there's been a lot of like shakeups in her package. But I do feel like next time we see Alyssa, we're not going to see the package from last year again.
Yeah, that's true. And I think like, I don't know, I don't want to be too vague. Like, if you don't want to go searching, basically, like, one of the artists on the song she was going to do in the short program, like, did something really heinous and evil. And I think it was the appropriate response to be like, okay, well, I don't want to, like, platform this artist's music anymore. Which is something that I think we would love to see more of, you know? I think she did the right thing. But I agree. I think if I may put that aside for a second, which, like, whatever, like, don't put that aside. It's terrible. But even that aside.
Yeah.
I thought that the program, having seen it once, the one that she was going to do, kind of just felt like an imitation of Promise that worked a little bit less for me. And so I'm like, if you're going to do Promise, just do Promise.
You know? The point of it, I think, was it was going to have to be like the
sequel.
Continuation of it, the sequel. And I don't know how I feel about that. And I am excited to, honestly, I don't have anything to say about anything that we haven't said to say about Promise and her MacArthur Park, because she won worlds with them and they are, it's a very, very solid package. I was happy to see it again. I do feel like I am excited to have her do other things because I'm not like anti-repeat. And if that, like, it works for some people, it works for some cases. I feel like because this package was so special in its context last year, I kind of want her to get the opportunity to move away from it because she came in with a different context to it, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
I feel like now we're at a different spot. I do think it was very charming that her own Promise moved her to tears again because it is a very moving program. And I think that's very, very sweet and charming.
I love that too. I was like, that's so relatable. She just came off the ice crying like, it's so sad.
Yeah, it's like, it's not where she's at right now, I don't think, in her journey anymore, but it's very sweet to know, like, how deep it is and continues to be.
It makes me cry, like, just knowing, I mean, I think everybody can relate to having something in their life that, like, they love so much and is so much a part of them, but also, like, sometimes they're just like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Yep, that's real. I will say, kind of looking ahead, because she in all of her interviews was like, oh yeah, I'm going back to the kitchen, let me cook kind of thing. I am excited to see how she reworks the Lady Gaga because I really want it to be good. And the one time we did see it, I thought it was a little overwhelming. And I'm not going to comment on that because that's not what we saw this week. And I feel like if it's being reworked, there is a reason for that. And I am excited to see whether she can make it be like the program that you want it to be, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't see it and I was going to try and find it, but now I think I'm going to wait until I see the version she wants me to see.
Yeah, yeah. Amber Glenn won. Doesn't that feel good to say?
Doesn't
always?
It feel like just yesterday that we were talking about, oh, Amber Glenn got called up to go to Cup of China last minute and like, wow. And now she's just like the 2-time in a row winner. Where does time go?
Her journey will continue to move me so profoundly, and she is simply so special, and she locked in when it mattered. She was third in the short, and then we had Martyr Face Amber for the free skate, where it's like, it's just gonna have to happen, and my God, did it ever. This is one of those where I'm so happy to see her stay with her free skate from last year, because I feel like she digs so deep, like, emotionally for it. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy seeing it. And also because her new short program the Madonna short program is so instantly extremely iconic, like instant staple in the gay music video night rotation. Simply everything about it, the costume, the orchestrations, the triple axel after home, like everything about it is so iconic that I think it's clever to not want to do two brand new things that are bidding to be this strikingly memorable and potential viral moments and all of that is smart, actually.
Yeah, and I wonder if we are moving towards an age of skating where it is just kind of universally accepted that it's okay if the better move for you is just taking something you already know and perfecting it even more or reworking it a little bit or like diving further into it. Like the standard of everybody has to have two new things every single year, I wonder if that's just going out of fashion and because it's working better.
I would honestly love to see that. Yeah.
If it works better for the athletes, I would really love to see it. I know it's working well for Amber. I love her new costume. I think I prefer her new costume to the old one. The blue is just so gorgeous on her.
The blue is so beautiful. And I also did want to say that she apparently just has both dresses with her. So she was like, we will see. Like, she will be deciding which one she wears, which I always enjoy as like a little interactive element to.
Yes. To that's the kind of reveal I want.
Yeah, that's a fun reveal, but she looks so, so beautiful in that blue. And I don't know, I just, everything that she's kind of bringing to the table just really works for me. And I really hope that having started her Grand Prix season with, I mean, she said it in one of her interviews after she won, she was like, this was obviously not perfect, but this is like, goes to show that I don't have to be 100% perfect all the time too. When functionally, mm-hmm. I'm like misquoting, obviously, because I don't have her exact quote in front of me. But I feel like this is the confidence boost that is going to make her even more dangerous heading into the rest of the season. And I am extremely excited to see where that goes for her.
Me too. I will say, like, I love the Like a Prayer. I want to see it, like, absolutely perfect. I think, like, whatever, she had, like, a little hand-down situation on the jump and... That is what it is. I can't do anything she does, and I don't have any comments about that. But what I noticed as a viewer is I sort of felt that the timing of each individual little intricate choreographical moment felt a little off from the music for me. And so I really sometimes that happens. As far as I can tell, sometimes that happens, and I can't imagine that it has to be the first priority. Like, it has to be, like, the first thing to go in a way of, like, it, you know, it's nice if it matches up perfectly. But, like, at a certain point, there's so many things to consider with timing and getting everything in that, like, if, like, that's got to be the first thing that falls away, right? And coming from the music world, I'm so, like, stay on beat pilled that
I obviously don't compete at her level, and I never will. I am an adult beginner. I compete with single jumps, and I have one combination in most of my programs. But I can tell you right now that, yes, it is the first thing to go.
I can't even imagine. Like, I was even putting myself in her shoes. I'm like, yeah, of course that would be the first thing to go.
It's literally even at, like, my level, which, again, is rudimentary as all fuck. If you do, like, sometimes... For example, I tend to hesitate a little bit entering my spins. And sometimes if I wait a second too long, then I, you know, in order to get my rotations enough to have my spin count, I will miss, like, the second where it would be the prettiest to exit. Like, it's usually so, like, intricately interwoven. And that's, like, again, at, like, an absolute nothing level. And at her level where it's, like... Everything is so, so, so beautifully built to be as incredible as possible. And there are so many micro moments. I feel like it could be very easy to, like, have a fraction of a second mean that, oh, yeah, maybe this hand doesn't, like, go all the way up now because we have to be moving on towards the next thing.
Yeah, and I can also imagine it would be really disorienting to figure out where you are and, like, where you should be.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, I'm having... I mean, I guess having been doing, like, stay on the beat of the music related things my entire life. I still sometimes I'm like, where the fuck am I? Like, where should I be right now? How do I fix this? In the because of the adrenaline in a live performance. So absolutely. I think if that's like the last cherry on top detail, like I'm excited to see that solely because I know she can do it. And I think the Caitlin Weaver choreography is so detailed and beautiful that I bet always when it's genius. Matched up,
yeah.
that it's like absolutely perfect. But yeah, that'll be something to look forward to for next time.
My final thing that I want to say about Amber, and we don't really cover the galas on here, but I do want to say that she finally got her fairy wings. She tweeted about wanting to be in a gala where she gets to wear fairy wings about, like, what, 2 years ago? And she finally got to do that, and all of the content about it was real fucking sweet. I just love seeing Amber, Queen of Manifestation, continue to manifest her way into being one of the goats. And I'm so excited to see where that takes us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, one of the good things that Twitter has given us is the I love
the power of manifestation.
Yeah, I love the genre of tweet where it's like somebody tweets something and you can, and it's been around for long enough that it's like I'm thinking of like Megan Thee Stallion being like, I think I might try rapping. You know what I mean? And yeah. then like there is a tweet that says that from like 2014 or something like that. Like I love yeah. that. That's my favorite genre. So even the fairy wings is like, it's doing it for me.
Or, like, someone, I always love when it's someone tweeting, like, LOL, this guy at the coffee shop just accidentally took my cookie. And then, like, 5 years later, it's like, it's our wedding day. And I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, it, yeah. a genre of, like, it's one of the things that, like, keeps me coming to the hellscape that is the internet. This has been an episode, Megan. I think it's...
It has. Can I talk you through some plushies?
Yes, please, please. First of all, some of the plushies, questionable. Some of the plushies... politically bad. Thankfully, that's not happening in our categories, so men and women didn't get any. To our knowledge, inquest worthy is what I'm gonna say. Any inquest worthy pieces. And yeah. Instead, we got Hit Me With Them.
Okay, so in the women's short, Ryan got all the plushies. She got a red panda, a penguin, a unicorn, a rose, a big bear, a bunny, a turtle in a bowler hat, which, again, like, there
so
are turtles.
Turtles
are part of it. And some kind of vegetable. A lot of vegetables going around this season. I don't know what they are. Is it because I don't eat enough vegetables? Maybe. Yiju got a rose, a bunny, a pillow of herself. A lot of pillows of people's selves going around. A lot of, like, pillow with you on it.
I find them a little bit distressing.
It depends on how photorealistic they are. For me, if it's a cartoon, sure. If it looks like you were shrink-wrapped, I don't like it.
Okay.
But she also got a big dog dressed as her, but also simultaneously a chef. Get you a big dog who can do both. And a huge unicorn. Reno got a penguin. Oh, I wrote a big projectile Pikachu. That was before that wording was a bad idea.
No.
She also got...
Pikachu is allowed.
Wait, no, hold on. I misread my own notes. She got a Pikachu, and then she got a big projectile acorn, which, again, wording, whatever. And also a brown, I don't know how, brown. It's like the line friend's bear. He's like a line friend's bear. He's got that face. Yeah. Okay. Anna P. got a green bear. Heian got a flower crown and a pillow of herself. Ringa, of course, got many isopods. Hana Yoshida got a Yoshiba, I don't know, and a Psyduck. And Amber got a long cat, Hello Kitty. In the men's short, Jiming Pang got Spider-Man and an Elefante. Boyang got a Boyang pillow, many Spider-Men. The whole rink was a Spider-Verse. That's always exciting. Tomoki got a crayon Shin-Chan and a little lemon guy. Vladlin Vincent got a chipmunk. Jacob got a shark and a cat, question mark, and a horrifying Slender Jacob doll. That was an example of one I did not care for and could have lived without.
Yep.
Dennis got all his friends, a panda holding a rose,
that.
A bear. Sota got a panda. A lot of pandas were happening. None of them were Bing Duen Duen, probably for legal reasons. Bing Duen Duen had to be put in the incinerator after the last Olympics because of the law.
Legally distinct, different pandas.
Legally distinct, generic pandas. Sota got a panda, a cat, and he missed the cat, but he came back for it, which I liked. Shun got a purple bunny, a pink bear slash possibly a pig. And Chidorov got a panda neck pillow and a pillow of himself. Now, in the men's free, Dennis got two pandas, a red cat person. in parentheses, a plushie of a furry. I wasn't sure. And a lion. And that was, I guess, when he said he was here with all his friends, which was
sad. Yeah, it was. It
but on a happier note.
Broke me. Yeah.
Maybe. Jacob Sanchez got two teddies, a goat, and a ripped cockroach with abs, which was like very Gregor Samsa.
I'm obsessed with that. I'm obsessed with that creature. And in the mixed zone afterwards, like all of his pictures of him like talking to people are... It's the one he chose to hold on to. And he is a man of culture and taste. And I want to know why. I want to know the person who picked out that plushie. How did we arrive at that choice? And can I also please have one?
I mean, he's from New York. And I feel like we can both attest that the New York cockroaches do kind of have like abs and superhuman strength.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And we respect them. And we do. Please don't eat us.
Yeah. Jun got a Jun pillow. Tomoki got a panda. Mm-hmm. Boyan got a Spider-Man. Again, all these things are expected. Soda got a panda and a dog. Sidebar. Chris, announcer, his full Christian name, just said, I think he meant to see, he was talking about in the replays during this plushie corner that I was taking notes on. He was talking about Soda getting his full rotations, and he said it's a big ask to make it around, but it really, really sounded like he said it's a big ask to make it around. And that tickled me.
I respect that.
Shadarov got a panda. He got some bamboo, which I thought was a fun riff on the panda thing. A big bunny and a panda flower crown. Shun got a duck. I'm going to say that again because I punched my microphone. Shun got a duck. Now, in the women's free, Hana got an elefante, a penguin, a whole armful of other things, and a Hana pillow. Rayan got a cat, a bear, and an octopus hat. Oh, I thought that said octopus shat. No, octopus hat. Pillow of herself as a Powerpuff Girl. That one I thought was really cute.
I think that was the only pillow that I was like, yeah, I would probably enjoy getting that.
Yeah, it was far enough away from the Uncanny Valley that it was cute. Iju got some pig people and a big green cat in her costume with a flower crown. Haein got three Haein pillows, one of which depicted her as Colonel Sanders. anyway, Reno got a panda and Amber got two Amber pillows and an octopus. And as a person who has given Amber a plushie of a sea creature that she has taken into the Kiss and Cry before, I feel a connection with whoever gave her the octopus. We are sisters now. And that's it. That's Plushie Corner.
Well, this concludes China. And next week, or this week, as of you listening and us talking about it, we are in Canada. The weird scrambled up Grand Prix series continues. We will try to cover as much of it as possible, but it is Halloween and we may or may not have, you know, other plans. So we'll try to be on the internet as much as possible. But speaking of Halloween, you can watch the VOD and listen to our spooky, scary, terrifying Halloween Patreon stream if you sign up to be a patron and help us keep the lights on and help with our Halloween costume budget, which will make sense if you hop on there. That's patreon.com/iced pod. And Megan, do you want to give me a list of people who are responsible for the fact that I had to go out and purchase a bold cap? That's a little teaser for y'all.
Yes, I do. Because you know what?
Hit me with it.
My patrons will be my patrons at the Patreon of Success.
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful? I made that up. Listen, thank you to Neve Cricket, Laura T, Christine, Rhea, Anna, Mandolin Arts, Robin is Trans and Tired, Tracy, Josiah, Sabrina, Alina, Catherine, Margaret, Robert, Vox Machina, Samantha, Aaron, Joseph, KM, Jennifer, Jules, and Jordan. I think I did that all in one breath. I'm still going. Wow.
Wow, that was so impressive. Thank you guys so very much. And if you're listening and you're here, thank you for keeping us company and joining us and going through the roller coaster of this Grand Prix series with us. We will see you very, very soon. Have a spooky one, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.